July reached 2026. If you were anywhere near the tech or, you know, the enterprise space, that date probably still gives you a knot in your stomach.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because, well, we're not talking about a day the internet crashed or like a massive ransomware gang hijacked the grid. July 1, 2026 was the day we realized the master keys to global enterprise infrastructure hadn't just been stolen.
Right. They were basically published.
Exactly. Published in the digital equivalent of a local newspaper, just for anyone to find. So today we are taking a deep dive into this totally unprecedented cybersecurity crisis.
And, you know, we've got a really thick stack of sources in front of us today to unpack it all.
Yeah, we have Adobe's emergency security bulletins, threat intelligence reports from analysts like Jake Williams and Kevin Beaumont, and this really great strategic business breakdown from the TIC and analytical team.
Which is super helpful because our mission here is to really understand what happens when two massive software platforms, Adobe ColdFusion and Adobe Campaign Classic, the structural failures at the exact same time.
Right. And to really grasp what these sources are telling us, we have to look at the numbers Adobe disclosed that morning because, I mean, this was not your standard Tuesday patch update.
No, not at all. They issued an emergency bulletin for 7 simultaneous 10.0 severity scores.
Okay, let's just let's unpack this for a second,
right?
Because getting one 10.0 score is like a rare drop everything and call the incident response team kind of nightmare.
Yeah, it's panic mode.
Right. Finding 7 of them across your product line is almost unheard of. I mean, to put this in perspective for you, a 10.0 isn't like a hacker guessing a weak password.
No, it's literally the maximum possible score on the Common Vulnerability Scoring System, or CVSS.
Right. So if finding one CVSS 10.0 is like finding a ticking time bomb in your house, Adobe just found 7, and they're all wired to go off at once.
That's a great way to put it. And they were sitting in the foundations of Fortune 500 companies, banks, government agencies.
So, okay. We've established this as a historic emergency, but to really grasp the danger, we need to decode what a perfect score actually means.
Yeah, because when we look at the CVSS framework, it grades vulnerabilities on a scale from 0 to 10 based on a really strict set of criteria.
Right.
And the reason a 10.0 is the absolute worst case scenario is that it represents a total bypass of human error. The vulnerability is just, well, it's baked entirely into the structural architectural level of the software itself.
Okay, wait, let me just push back and clarify this, because usually we hear about breaches starting with an employee mistake.
Sure.
Right? Say someone in accounting gets a sophisticated phishing email, they click a bad link, or a vendor reuses a password.
Yeah, the classic human element.
Exactly. So you're telling me an attacker can take full control of a server without anyone inside the company making a single mistake?
Yes. That is exactly what makes this so terrifying. They don't even have to knock. Let's break down the exact mechanics of a perfect 10, according to the framework. So first, the attack vector is network, meaning it can be launched remotely from anywhere over the public internet.
You don't need to be in the building.
Right. No physical access or local network connection needed. Second, the attack complexity is low.
Meaning what exactly?
It means the attacker doesn't need elite state-sponsored hacking tools or like weirdly specific timing conditions to make it work. The exploit is super reliable and easy to repeat.
Wow. Okay. And third on the list is unauthenticated, right?
Yep. Unauthenticated, meaning no username, no password, no stolen session tokens required at all. You don't have to trick the system into thinking you are a legitimate user.
And then you add no user interaction.
Exactly. You don't have to trick an employee into clicking a bad link or opening a corrupted PDF. The attacker interacts directly with the vulnerable software.
Yeah, just straight in.
Straight in. And finally, the criteria demands complete impact. The attacker gains total unrestricted control over the entire system.
What we call remote code execution.
Yes, RCE. They can read any file, change any database, wipe the server completely. Bruce Schneier, who is a really highly respected security expert, summarized the Adobe bulletin perfectly in the source material.
What did he say?
He basically said this is equivalent to leaving your company's vault door wide open.
Man. And when you have a vulnerability, this complete, I mean, the potential damage isn't just determined by the hack itself. It's determined by what the server is actually holding.
Right.
Right.
Oh, exactly.
And looking at the targets in these briefings, ColdFusion and Campaign Classic, we aren't just talking about a breached firewall. We're talking about the keys to the kingdom across two very different eras of enterprise tech.
Yeah. And the contrast between those two systems is really what makes this crisis so layered. Let's look at Adobe Cold Fusion first.
Okay.
So this is a legacy web application development platform, and it was introduced all the way back in 1995.
In 1995. I mean, that's the era of dial-up modems and Netscape Navigator.
It really is.
And yet, reading through the usage stats in our sources, Cold Fusion is still silently running the back-end applications of major commercial banks, global supply chains, and federal healthcare providers today.
Yeah, it acts as this aging, load-bearing structural foundation for thousands of enterprise networks. And out of the 7 10.0 flaws Adobe announced, Cold Fusion accounted for 6 of them.
6 of the 7. Unbelievable.
And the intelligence reports indicate these vulnerabilities primarily involve 2 catastrophic mechanical failures, path traversal and unrestricted file uploads.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for you listening. Because path traversal, it sounds like this dense IT term, but the mechanism behind it is surprisingly physical when you visualize it.
Yeah, how would you describe it?
Well, think of a web server as a building. When you visit a website, the server is supposed to keep you confined to the public lobby, right? The web directory where the HTML and images live.
Right.
But a path traversal flaw means the system fails to sanitize the user's input. So attackers use a simple string of characters, specifically ../har, to tell the server to basically back up out of the lobby and walk into the private offices.
That's a great analogy.
It's like a customer finding a hidden door in the public bathroom of a bank that lets them walk straight into the main vault purely because the building's architecture forgot to lock the drywall.
Yes. And by sending those ... commands in a web request, an attacker can access files completely outside the authorized web root. They navigate directly into the server's operating system.
Which means they can read configuration files.
Exactly. Files that contain hard-coded database passwords, or they can extract encryption keys, or even pull proprietary source code.
And then, when you pair that path traversal with the second major flaw you mentioned, the unrestricted file uploads, the situation goes from bad to unrecoverable.
Unrecoverable is definitely the right word, because if a server allows unrestricted file uploads, it means it doesn't check what kind of file a user is handing it.
So they aren't uploading a harmless JPEG profile picture.
No, they upload a malicious web shell.
Which is basically a small script that gives the hacker a command line interface directly on your server, right?
Yes. The server blindly accepts the web shell, and then the attacker uses the path traversal flaw to execute it. Once that shell is running, the attacker has achieved total remote code execution. They own the server.
So they can drop ransomware, pivot to other machines on the internal network, quietly siphon data, anything.
Anything. And the briefing notes that Cold Fusion didn't just have 6 10.0s. Adobe also announced a cluster of other vulnerabilities at the exact same time.
Right. There were 2 flaws scoring a 9.3 and some high severity 8.8s.
Yeah. Things like cross-site scripting and server-side request forgery. And this highlights a crucial tactic in modern cyber warfare, which is vulnerability chaining.
Ah, right. Because attackers rarely rely on just one exploit, do they?
Almost never. Let's say a server has a mechanism blocking that path traversal. A hacker might use a server-side request forgery to gain initial access.
Which essentially tricks the server into making a trusted request on the hacker's behalf, bypassing the firewall entirely.
Right. Then they use a 9.3 privilege escalation flaw to upgrade their status from a guest to an administrator. And finally, they trigger the unrestricted file upload to drop their web shell.
So they layer medium and high severity flaws to essentially create their own custom 10.0 attack path.
Exactly.
Man. So, okay, that covers the legacy workhorse, Cold Fusion. But the second target, Campaign Classic, operates in a completely different sphere.
It does.
Like, if Cold Fusion is the aging structural foundation, Campaign Classic is the modern vault full of customer gold.
Yeah, it's a premier enterprise marketing automation platform. Thousands of major global brands rely on it to manage their outbound communications. So we're talking email campaigns, SMS marketing, push notifications, customer journeys.
Meaning it has to be hooked directly into the most sensitive data a company possesses.
By design, it integrates intimately with a company's customer relationship management systems, CRMs, and their enterprise resource planning systems.
Right.
It ingests massive databases containing customer names, physical addresses, email addresses, phone numbers, purchase histories, and highly specific behavioral data.
And Campaign Classic was hit with its own perfect 10.0 flaw, which Adobe categorized as an incorrect authorization vulnerability.
Yeah, and we need to explain the mechanics of how authorization fails like this.
Please do.
Usually, when an application requests data from a database, it passes along an authentication token, basically a digital ID card proving the user logged in and has the rights to see that data.
Okay, so an incorrect authorization flaw means the application's API fundamentally fails to validate that token.
Exactly. The API endpoints were totally exposed. An attacker could send a carefully crafted web request directly to the Campaign Classic server asking for customer data, and the server would simply hand it over.
It didn't even verify if the request came from an authenticated admin or just an anonymous IP address halfway across the world.
Nope. The attacker could manipulate campaign workflows, alter marketing templates to send phishing emails from the company's legitimate domain, or systematically extract entire customer databases without ever encountering a single login screen.
Wow. I mean, think about the systems your own company uses to send out marketing emails or track customer behavior. If an attacker bypassed that login today, they wouldn't just have your email templates, they'd have your entire CRM.
And in highly regulated industries, the fallout from that is catastrophic.
Right. The analysts specifically point out the impact on banking and healthcare here.
Yeah. For banks, bypassing authorization could lead to unauthorized fund transfers or massive violations of PCI DSS, which are the strict security standards required for handling credit card data.
And in healthcare, exposing a Campaign Classic database means exposing patient communication logs, appointment reminders, treatment histories.
Which triggers massive HIPAA violations governing the privacy of medical records in the U.S. A breach of that magnitude isn't just an IT failure, it's a federal compliance disaster.
So we literally have the vault doors blown off both the foundational infrastructure and the modern customer databases at the same time.
Yeah.
And Adobe slapped a priority one status on this, urging every enterprise to patch their systems within 72 hours. But, you know, looking closely at the Adobe Bulletin, there is a very specific line that says there were, quote, no active attacks in the wild at the time of the announcement.
Right, I saw that.
So if no one is actively exploiting these flaws, a 72-hour emergency patch window for massive enterprise systems seems almost panicked. Like, are the analysts overreacting?
They definitely aren't overreacting. They're looking at historical telemetry. Mm. Security researcher Kevin Beaumont called this announcement a perfect storm.
So it's not just a possibility.
No, exploitation isn't a hypothetical possibility. It is an impending mathematical certainty. The historical data from 2023 and 2024 proves this.
Yeah, the sources do mention that Cold Fusion was heavily targeted recently.
Heavily is an understatement. In 2023, Cold Fusion servers were decimated by massive waves of ransomware, specifically utilizing older path traversal flaws.
Oh, wow.
Dozens of government agencies and private organizations were crippled because they were too slow to patch. And in 2024, threat actors discovered a zero-day flaw in Cold Fusion.
Meaning they found the vulnerability before Adobe did.
Right, and they actively exploited it in the wild before a patch was even written.
So the threat actors already have the blueprints to these systems. They know exactly how Cold Fusion handles file directories and where Campaign Classic stores its APIs.
Which is exactly why security analyst Jake Williams laid out a highly compressed, highly probable timeline for this crisis.
What does the timeline look like?
Well, week one involves the release of a proof of concept. Independent security researchers, or the attackers themselves, will reverse engineer Adobe's patch. By looking at the code Adobe changed, they can deduce exactly how the original vulnerability worked and write a script to exploit it.
And then we hit week two, right? Which Williams calls weaponization.
Yes.
This is where attackers build automated tools to scan the entire internet for vulnerable servers. The brief specifically mentions tools like Shodan and Sensis.
Yeah, so Shodan and Sensis operate essentially like Google, but instead of indexing websites, they index internet-connected devices and servers.
Okay.
When you connect a server to the internet, it broadcasts a banner identifying its software version. Attackers can simply write a query in Shodan for Adobe Cold Fusion and instantly receive a list of IP addresses for every publicly accessible Cold Fusion server on the planet.
And they just feed that list into their weaponized script.
Exactly. And by weeks 3 and 4, the widespread ransomware attacks and data breaches begin.
So we have to look at who is actually pulling the trigger here.
Yeah.
Because the threat intelligence reports categorize the adversaries into two very distinct profiles.
Right.
First, you have the financially motivated ransomware syndicates, groups like Lockbit, ALPHV, and ClioZeroP.
And these groups operate like highly organized, malicious corporations. They are constantly scanning for easy remote code execution vulnerabilities because it allows them to bypass the initial time-consuming steps of a hack.
Makes sense.
A CVSS 10.0 with no user interaction required is literally the holy grail for ransomware operators. It allows them to drop their encryption payloads rapidly across an entire enterprise network, lock the systems, and demand millions in cryptocurrency.
So that's the loud, destructive attack. They want you to know they're there.
Very loud.
But the analysts also highlight a second, much quieter threat profile, which honestly seems far more insidious. Nation-state APTs, or advanced persistent threats.
Yeah, we are talking about highly sophisticated state-sponsored cyber espionage groups. The intelligence highlights China's APT-41 and Russia's APT-29, often referred to as Cozy Bear.
Right.
Their goal isn't to encrypt your files and extort you. Their goal is initial access and long-term persistence.
And the reports show they have a well-documented history of targeting Cold Fusion specifically.
Mm.
But why do Russian and Chinese state hackers love a web platform from 1995?
Because legacy systems often lack modern security telemetry and logging capabilities.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, if APT-29 compromises a modern cloud environment, there are dozens of automated alarms that might trip. But if they compromise an aging Cold Fusion server buried deep in a corporate network, they can hide in the noise.
Just flying under the radar.
Exactly. They use that initial foothold to escalate privileges, silently move laterally into the main Active Directory, and establish backdoors. They could sit on a compromised server for years, quietly exfiltrating sensitive government communications or proprietary corporate data without ever being detected.
Wow. Which, I mean, naturally leads us to the core business lesson of this entire crisis. If Cold Fusion has this dark history, if it got hammered by ransomware in 2023, 0 days in 2024, and every security analyst knows it's a prime target for Russian intelligence, why on earth are major Fortune 500 companies and government agencies still using it?
It's a great question, and this is where we transition from a technical IT problem to a strategic corporate failure. The Tech and Analytical Teams report focuses specifically on this phenomenon, identifying it as technical debt.
Technical debt. Let's just ground this concept for you real quick. It's essentially like refusing to replace the balding tires on your car because a new set of tires is expensive and time-consuming to install, right?
Yeah, perfect analogy.
You keep putting it off, saving money in the short term, driving on borrowed time, until one day you're driving 70 miles an hour in a rainstorm and you hydroplane right into a concrete wall. The debt always comes due, and with interest.
That captures the business logic perfectly. Organizations stay locked into these 30-year-old legacy platforms because the migration costs are astronomically high.
Right.
We're talking about ripping out the foundation of custom-built, deeply integrated applications that process billions of dollars in revenue. Executives fear system downtime and operational disruption during a migration. The prevailing attitude is often, if it isn't completely broken, don't fix it.
But the 7.10.0 flaws proved that it is fundamentally broken.
And it proves that cybersecurity can no longer be delegated solely to the IT help desk in the basement. It is a strategic, board-level issue. The Tekken report breaks this down from an enterprise risk management perspective. C-suite executives have to evaluate the holistic risk of technical debt. First, you have operational risk. If ransomware takes down your legacy server, your customer portals go dark, internal processes halt, and revenue completely stops.
Then you have the compliance and legal risk, which we touched on with IPAY and PCI DSS.
Oh, and the financial penalties for those failures are staggering. If European customer data is exposed through Campaign Classic, you are looking at GDPR violations.
Those are huge.
Massive. Under GDPR, regulators can fine a company up to 4% of their global annual revenue.
Wow, 4%.
For a multinational corporation, that is a devastating financial blow. Publicly traded companies are also bound by SOX regulations, meaning they have to disclose material cybersecurity incidents to their shareholders, which immediately impacts stock valuation.
And none of that even accounts for the reputational risk. Yep. The catastrophic loss of customer trust, the negative media cycles, the class action lawsuits. When you aggregate all of that, holding on to a legacy system to save on migration costs isn't frugal. As the Tekken report argues, in today's threat landscape, ignoring technical debt and accepting vendor lock-in is essentially enterprise negligence.
The ultimate cost of a breach vastly eclipses the initial cost of modernization.
So what does this all mean for the people on the ground? Let's say you are listening to this and your organization runs these systems. You're staring down a 72-hour patch window and you know the automated scanners are already probing your network. What is the actual survival guide?
Well, the response plan depends entirely on your architecture. Let's start with the immediate relief. If your organization uses the cloud-hosted version of Campaign Classic, meaning it is an instance hosted and managed directly by Adobe, you are safe.
Oh, that's good news.
Yeah, Adobe automatically applied the patches to their cloud infrastructure before they even published the bulletin.
That is a massive validation for migrating to managed cloud services.
Yeah.
But what about the organizations running on-premise or hybrid environments, the ones who host the software on their own physical servers?
For them, the situation is critical. The vulnerability is live. However, the golden rule of enterprise crisis management applies here. Do not panic, and do not patch directly in a production environment.
Wait, I want to push back on that. Because if I have an actively exploited 10.0 vulnerability on my server, my instinct is to slam the update button immediately to close the door. Why wouldn't I patch the live server right now?
I get that instinct, but applying an untested core patch to a complex legacy application can sometimes cause as much operational downtime as the cyber attack itself.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It can break custom code, disrupt database connections, or crash-dependent applications. You have to isolate the patch in a development or staging environment first. You install it, run your automated tests, verify that business-critical features still function, and then roll it out to production.
Right. The source documents outline a very specific manual process for Cold Fusion.
Right.
Administrators have to download the specific update file directly from the Adobe portal, completely stop the Cold Fusion application service, run the installer with elevated administrator privileges, restart the service, and then manually verify the new version number in the admin console.
And verifying those version numbers is the only way to know if you were actually exposed.
Right. So if I'm a small business relying on a third-party vendor, how do I check?
For Cold Fusion, administrators need to check their admin console. If they are running Cold Fusion 2025, any version prior to update 10 is vulnerable. If they are on Cold Fusion 2023, anything before update 21 is vulnerable.
And for Campaign Classic?
For Campaign Classic, they need to check the Help and About section. If the build number is 7.4.3, build 9396 or lower, the server is compromised. And of course, run scanners like Shodan or Nessus internally to verify.
But what if a company physically cannot patch within 72 hours? What if they have a massive, complex application dependency, and updating Cold Fusion right now will break their entire supply chain software? The brief mentions temporary mitigations, right?
Yes. If you cannot patch, you have to implement defensive layers immediately to buy time. The most critical step is configuring your web application firewalls, or WFs. No. A WAF sits in front of your web server and monitors incoming traffic. You need to implement strict custom rules that look for and block path traversal patterns, specifically filtering out any web requests containing those ... commands.
So you're essentially instructing the security guard to tackle anyone asking for directions to the hidden door.
Precisely. Furthermore, administrators must strictly limit or completely disable file upload capabilities on these servers to prevent the deployment of web shells. They need to force all administrative connections through a secure VPN, ensuring the server's backend is not directly facing the public internet. And finally, they must enable continuous 247 Security Operations Center monitoring. Every log, every login attempt, every file change needs to trigger an alert.
We have to be clear, though, a WAF is just a temporary band-aid. Sophisticated attackers, especially those APT groups we discussed, routinely find ways to bypass WAF rules by encoding their traffic or finding alternative input fields.
Mm-hmm.
Patching is the only definitive way to eradicate the vulnerability.
Absolutely. The mitigations only buy you hours, maybe days. They do not solve the structural failure.
When we zoom out and look at the monumental scale of July 1st, 2026, it paints a very sobering picture of modern enterprise security. We're looking at 7 perfect 10.0 flaws spanning across a 30-year-old legacy foundation and a cutting-edge modern data vault.
It really is staggering.
It's a bitter reminder that no system, regardless of its age or the size of the vendor who built it, is fundamentally secure.
And it serves as the ultimate catalyst for the industry to aggressively adopt a zero-trust architecture. The days of relying on a strong perimeter firewall to protect a soft internal network are over. Zero trust dictates that you assume your network is already hostile. You assume the attacker is already inside.
It's a complete paradigm shift from trust but verify to never trust, always verify.
Exactly. It requires strict micro-segmentation of networks. So if one server is compromised, the attacker is trapped and cannot move laterally.
Right.
It mandates least privilege access, ensuring that applications and users only have access to the absolute minimum data required to do their jobs. And it requires robust multi-factor authentication at every single interaction point. Security must be interwoven into the fundamental architecture of the system from day one, not bolted on as a reactionary afterthought.
And that brings us back to the concept of technical debt, which might be the most profound, lingering lesson of this entire deep dive. We've just spent our time exploring how a web platform launched in 1995 could bring global enterprises to their knees in 2026, simply because it was deemed too expensive and too complicated to replace. It became an invisible liability.
And that cycle of accumulating debt and deferring modernization is constantly repeating itself in boardrooms right now.
So I want to leave you with a thought to ponder as you look at your own organization or the services you rely on. Look at the hyper-fast, cutting-edge software platforms dominating the market today. Look at the AI-driven infrastructure, the rapid deployment cloud environments, and the massive data lakes that organizations are currently rushing to build their entire business models around. Everyone is moving fast, pushing code, and breaking things to capture market share. But fast forward 30 years. Which of today's modern technological marvels will become the terrifying, unpatchable technical debt holding the global economy hostage in 2056? Because somewhere in the world right now, a developer is building a brand new state-of-the-art vault, and they might just be forgetting to install the lock.